Okay. Mr. Donahue argued that my interpretation of 1 Corinthians 13 wasn't coherent because when I get to heaven, prophecy in tongues will still exist for other people. No, I want to apply this prophecy in tongues ceasing for me consistently. When I get to heaven, prophecy in tongues will cease for me. I will no longer experience these things. I will no longer need these things because I will be in the presence of God and those things will be completely moot. And that applies to every individual. When we get to heaven, when the perfect comes for us, prophecy in tongues will cease for us. Now, Mr. Donahue misrepresented my my defense of various changes in Catholic discipline. I don't claim he's doing it on purpose at all, but nevertheless, it's what he did. He attributed to me the argument that various disciplines are wrong, but they're allowed to be wrong because they're only discipline and the Catholic Church is only infallible in teaching. No, my argument was not that these disciplines are wrong, except with respect to the Inquisition, with respect to communion under both kinds, the mode of baptism, whatever other disciplinary measures Mr. Donahue raised where the Catholic Church has changed. My position is that both disciplines are good. The Church has a right to impose either one, just like the apostles had the right to forbid Christians from eating meat from strangled animals and meat with the blood in it, and the same apostles had the right to revoke that law, to abrogate that law at a later time. Both disciplines are good. More detail on Mr. Donahue's citation of 1 Timothy 4, 1-3, about apostates who forbid marriage and command abstinence from meat. As I indicated, the Church Fathers are in consensus that these verses are a prophecy of Gnostic and dualist groups who condemn these things as evil. The Catholic Church, on the other hand, teaches that these things are intrinsic goods. The Catholic Church forces no one to take a vow of celibacy. Vows of celibacy are completely voluntary. She simply expects one to be faithful to one's vow once one has taken it. St. Paul himself expected as much. In 1 Timothy 5, St. Paul gives instructions about the widow's role. Quote, refuse to enroll younger widows, for when they grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, and so they incur condemnation for having violated their first pledge. Note that carefully. By marrying, these widows violate their pledge and incur condemnation. Obviously, they had taken a vow of celibacy, and St. Paul held them to it. Next, regarding the mode of baptism, I unfortunately haven't been able to get to this issue yet. Mr. Donahue asserts that the word baptizo means to submerge. This is an oversimplification. While the primary meaning of baptizo is, in pre-Christian usage is indeed to submerge, the standard lexical reference works, such as Bauer, Danker, Arndt, and Gingrich, and Little and Scott, recognize as a secondary meaning to perform ablutions or ritual washings. These lexicons appeal to Luke chapter 11, verse 38. And the Pharisees often did these washings by pouring, based on the text in 2 Kings 3:11 that says that Elisha poured water over the hands of Elijah. Furthermore, you can't establish that baptism is by immersion alone simply by looking at its secular usage. The term took on a specific technical meaning in Christian theology, so you have to look at how the early Christians used it. In that vein, I will read some quotations from early Christian documents collected by Catholic Answers. The Didache, a first century document, lists as an acceptable mode of baptism to pour water three times upon the head in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Pope Cornelius I wrote that as Novatian was about to die, he received baptism in the bed where he lay by pouring. Cyprian advised that no one should be disturbed because the sick are poured upon or sprinkled when they receive the Lord's grace. Tertullian said that a man is baptized in water and amid the utterance of some few words is sprinkled and then rises again. Ancient Christian artwork depicts baptism by pouring. Ancient baptistries exist which are too small to submerge an adult in. All of this demonstrates that the Church has always held that immersion, pouring, and sprinkling are all valid modes of baptism, which mode the Church has used at any given time is a matter of discipline. Now I'm almost out of time, and I hope, Mr. Donahue, that I've been able to resolve some of your difficulties with the Catholic position. And if I haven't convinced you, I'd be happy to continue correspondence. It's absolutely intolerable that you should remain outside the Catholic Church with a fine Irish name like Patrick Donahue. And I make the same appeal to all the non-Catholics in the audience, even if you're not even a little bit Irish. The Catholic Church does not demand that you convert immediately upon hearing her claims. But she does require that you follow your consciences, that you examine her claims with rigorous intellectual honesty and in a spirit of prayer and docility to the promptings of divine grace. And it is the Catholic conviction that, if you do so, If you look at her miracles, God miraculously healed the hand of a friend of mine after his wife crushed his fingers in a van door, in circumstances clearly arranged by Providence to reinforce his faith in the Catholic doctrine of the Eucharist. If you look at the Catholic Church's saints, her best argument of all, if you look at her doctrines, if you examine the scriptures to see if these things are so, like the Barians, God will lead you to the truth. Thank you.